Hello and welcome to the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. Every 2 weeks, experts from AmBOSS, the medical education platform, interview medical students and healthcare professionals to showcase international perspectives on everything in medical school and beyond the textbook. Hello and welcome to this episode of the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. I'm Dr. Tanner Schrenk, and I'll be your host today. In this unique episode, we're going to go through the high-yield concepts that are covered in the myocardial infarction article within the AmBOSS library. So if you like this style of episode where we have an audio version of an AmBOSS article, let us know by leaving a comment or getting in touch with us. If you go to amboss.com and make your 5-day free trial or log into your account, you can follow along. We'll be going through the myocardial infarction article. You could find this by searching for MI in the search, or it's also visible by browsing through the library. So if you turn on high yield mode at the top, then you'll find that the sections that are most high yield for us are the summary, definition, epidemiology, etiology, pathophysiology, clinical features, diagnostics, pathology, differential diagnoses, treatment, and complications. So today I set my study objective as USMLE Step 2 CK. So my high yield and key exam info will be specific to that exam. If your study objective is something else, then you'll have different key exam info. For step one, emphasis is more on understanding the underlying mechanisms, pharmacology, and basic clinical manifestations. For step 2 CK, expect to focus on clinical diagnosis, management, and prevention strategies, as well as the treatment of associated complications. Now, when I turn on high yield mode and key exam info, I see the most tested information highlighted in yellow and the information I keep getting wrong in the question bank underlined in red. So this way I can focus on what's important and my weak areas. Let's focus on the highlighted yellow, starting with the definition. Type 1 MI is most common. It's caused by atherosclerotic plaque disruption or acute coronary thrombosis, which subsequently causes sudden death of myocardial cells. Now, in the US, MI occurs more often in males, and the most common etiology is coronary artery disease and coronary artery vasospasm. If we look at the underlying pathophysiology, coronary artery occlusion can be broken down into partial occlusion or complete occlusion. Partial usually affects the inner layer of the myocardium and typically manifests as unstable angina or an end-stemmy. Complete coronary artery occlusion usually affects the full thickness of the myocardium and typically manifests as STEMI or ST segment elevation myocardial infarction. Now, for type 1 MI, the atherosclerotic plaque that's disrupted can be a stable plaque manifesting as stable angina or an unstable plaque that's lipid-rich and covered by a thin fibrous cap. Inflammatory cells in the plaque, for example, macrophages, secrete matrix metalloproteinases, which break down the extracellular matrix, weakening the fibrous cap, leading to minor stress, which ruptures the cap, exposing the highly thrombogenic lipid core, and leads to the formation of a thrombus. Now, clinically, an MI can have multiple different presentations, but the classic presentation would be acute retrosternal chest pain, a dull squeezing pain commonly radiating to the left chest, arm, shoulder, neck, jaw, and or epigastrium. This can be precipitated by exertion or stress, and it can co-occur with dyspnea, pallor, nausea, vomiting, diaphoresis, anxiety, dizziness, lightheadedness, and syncope. Other presentations can include tachycardia, arrhythmia, congestive heart failure, cardiogenic shock, or new heart murmurs on auscultation. Atypical presentations, which are more likely in women, elderly patients, and diabetic individuals, could show no or minimal chest pain, also known as a silent MI. They can also show autonomic symptoms such as nausea and diaphoresis. And most often, with an inferior wall infarction, you'll see epigastric pain and bradycardia. Now, classically, it's been taught that STEMI manifests with more severe symptoms than end-STEMI, but that's not always the case. Now, let's get to the diagnostics. Of course, you run an ECG. A 12-lead is the initial test. Findings would include a pathological Q-wave, ST segment shift, and T-wave inversions. We have a handy chart on the article for you to localize the myocardial infarct on the ECG. You can run through that and look at the specific leads, the infarct locations, and the vessels involved to figure out where the cells are being damaged. And in a severe transmural posterior wall infarction, there can even be no ST elevation. Now, when we're testing to see if the cardiac biomarkers are elevated, we would focus on troponin T and I. You would see a rise 6 to 8 hours. Maximum rise would be in 12 to 24 hours, and they normalize in 7 to 10 days. CKMB, on the other hand, rises 4 to 9 hours. Maximum is also 12 to 24 hours, but CKMB normalizes in 2 to 3 days. Myoglobin rises after an hour. It reaches a maximum 4 to 12 hours and normalizes in 24, but it's nonspecific, so it's no longer commonly used. The most common cardiac-specific marker that you'll encounter would be serum troponin T and I. An additional lab study you could run would be a complete blood count, specifically looking for elevated inflammatory markers, including white blood cells and CRP. But the best test for a definitive diagnosis of acute coronary occlusion and to identify the site and degree of vessel occlusion would be coronary angiography. This can be used for concurrent interventions like PCI, and this would be indicated if you have an acute STEMI. And important to note, the most commonly occluded coronary arteries are the left anterior descending artery, the right coronary artery, and then the circumflex artery. Another diagnostic study you could run would be a transthoracic echocardiography, and this would show any wall motion abnormalities. This brings us to the pathology. So you can have a look at our helpful table showing the histopathological findings of MI, broken down by time interval, and the microscopic and macroscopic histopathological findings. You'll also want to check out the cellular changes section to find out all about reperfusion injury. After the acute coronary artery occlusion, the damaged myocytes release reactive oxygen species, the calcium enters the cytosol, and the myocytes hypercontract. This leads to neutrophilic infiltration, capillary obstruction, and contraction band necrosis of the myocardium. Now, for treatment, any patient with ST elevations on ECG would require immediate evaluation for urgent revascularization. The administration of other therapies should not delay this care. All patients should be considered for emergency percutaneous coronary intervention or PCI. Monitor with a serial 12-lead ECG, continuous cardiac monitoring, and serial serum troponin measurements. Start antiplatelet therapy and anticoagulation if possible. Using dual antiplatelet therapy, anticoagulation can include unfractionated heparin or low molecular weight heparin. Adjunctive therapies include giving oxygen only if there's cyanosis, severe dyspnea, or oxygen saturation below 90%. Sublingual or intravenous nitrates can be given unless you have an inferior wall infarct, hypotension, or a PDE5 inhibitor such as sildenafil has been taken within the last 24 hours. You can also give morphine, beta blockers, and statins. And the mnemonic to remember all of this is MONABASH: morphine, oxygen, nitroglycerin, antiplatelet drugs, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, statins, and heparin. Now we get to further management. Further management includes prevention of recurrent MI, lifestyle modifications, lipid-lowering therapy, antiplatelet therapy such as lifelong low-dose aspirin, a stent placement after PCI, and other cardioprotective drugs as indicated. Now, we have a handy table again for the overview of MI complications. Now, this is just the most highly tested information and the high-yield info for Step 2 CK. If we start a QBank session, we'll see some related questions that AMBOSS editors have highlighted for us. Here's an example. A 47-year-old man comes to the physician because of severe retrosternal chest pain and shortness of breath for 45 minutes. He has dyslipidemia, hypertension, and type 2 diabetes. Current medications include hydrochlorothiazide, lisinopril, metformin, and atorvastatin. He has smoked a pack of cigarettes a day for 20 years. He appears pale and diaphoretic. His temperature is 37 degrees Celsius, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Pulse is 115 beats per minute. Blood pressure is 140 over 70. Breath sounds are normal. The remainder of the exam shows no abnormalities. Now, an ECG shows left ventricular hypertrophy with ST segment elevation in leads 1, AVL, and V1 through V6. High-dose aspirin, clopidogrel, metoprolol, sublingual nitroglycerin, and unfractionated heparin are administered. As the patient awaits transport to the nearest emergency room, he collapses, becomes unresponsive. His pulse and blood pressure cannot be detected despite resuscitative efforts. Unfortunately, the patient dies. Which of the following is the most likely cause of death in this patient? We have A, papillary muscle rupture, B, left ventricular failure, C, ventricular fibrillation, D, pericarditis, E, free wall rupture, F, septal wall rupture, and G, pulmonary embolism. Our key info button says that we should focus on the ECG findings. Our attending tip says the ST segment elevations would lead us to think that the left anterior descending artery has a myocardial infarction. The patient's subsequent death within an hour of symptom onset is known as sudden cardiac death. So with this information, we should be able to figure out that C, ventricular fibrillation, is the correct answer. Sudden cardiac death after MI is usually due to ventricular tachyarrhythmias, such as VTAC or VFib. These arrhythmias compromise cardiac output and ultimately lead to asystole. Patients with VFib require rapid defibrillation and cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Otherwise, hemodynamic instability can lead to loss of consciousness and sudden cardiac death, which is the leading cause of death post-MI. So this was a 2 out of 5 hammer question. Try out the other associated questions in the Q Bank to test yourself and see how well you can do. That's all the high yield content we need to cover for MI for our exam. You can expand any of the sections and turn off high yield to focus on all the context you need to know. And make sure to explore our clinical cases in the AMBOSS library to test yourself for real clinical scenarios such as this. That's it for this audio article on myocardial infarction. Make sure to read up on the official USMLE content guidelines and practice more questions in the AMBOSS QBank. Thanks so much for listening. This has been another episode of the AMBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. I'm Dr. Tanner Schrank. Please let us know if you like this style of episode, and we'll see you next time. The links in the description can give you a more in-depth understanding of these concepts. If you like this episode, please give us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. You can check out the AMBOSS platform for your medical studies and sign up for a free 5-day trial at AMBOSS.com.